I'm going to introduce Jim Anderson from Wyoming, and he is going to give a summary and conclusion of our presentations. Okay.
Hi. Excuse me. How many surgeons were single surgeons in the town? How many are going to be practicing in 10 years? 15? They're thinning out. Which one goes up?
So it's this one that goes far.
Okay. This is the new part of Wyoming Medical Center. I avoided the old part. It's not quite as fancy. This is the state of Wyoming. Wyoming is the least populated state in the Union, sometimes considered frontier, not rural. My experience there, I came in 81. We had a number of small towns, 7,000, 10,000 people, one or two surgeons practicing rural surgery, and there's no trauma system. So I got involved in the trauma system and was a trauma chairman for 25 years. Wyoming was the first mandatory funded trauma system legislated in the United States. And so that was a coalition of rural surgeons and Wyoming Medical Center. We worked together and we accomplished a lot. And also, I was the only board certified vascular surgeon in Wyoming for 25 years. So I would do clinics in all the small towns, but I would only do them in the general surgeon's office if they wanted it. And so I would go, and so I would see vascular surgery patients and complex general surgery patients. And so I have a feeling for what it's like to be in these small rural areas. Oops, bad.
I don't know what you hit, but let me hear. So go forward, that one. Yeah, keep going forward.
In the past, younger surgeons would join the older, more experienced surgeons, which is what I did, and he kept me out of trouble more times than I can mention. Now we have younger surgeons coming out, less experienced, and definitely not experienced in a rural setting, except for a few programs are producing what they call rural surgeons. The rural situation, complications are shared with the entire community. Peer review starts in the beauty shop, the barber shop. You don't have a problem. You don't get to kill the mayor's wife and have a busy practice. I'm sorry. I speak from having seen that happen in Wyoming. Recruiting for general surgery, call 24/7, 365, occasional livestock, although a beef once in a while does help support your three sons. Poorly staffed hospitals, no ICU or the occasional ICU. We have one ICU bed that if it's staffed, you get to keep your patients. Low volume of complex cases, you're isolated. This is a hard sell. Future. Regional hospital supports the local surgeons for provided coverage. Elective general surgery, or all surgery done locally by regional surgeons if there's no local surgeon available. The key to this is if you have a local surgeon, he needs to be supported. The regional system has to support him, give him time off. One possibility is if you know, as we go into an acute care surgery system, maybe regional surgeons that in order to improve their volumes and income could come to a regional center, do shifts of acute care surgery, which gives them more cases, okay? And more experience. But it also gives you contact with your colleagues so you can help each other. Affordable transportation systems. In Wyoming, we have more helicopters than they did in Vietnam. And it only costs $40,000, $50,000 for a short ride. You break your hand in Riverton, you get a helicopter ride to Casper if the orthopedic surgeon's out of town. That's $30,000, $40,000. He could have walked. It's not appropriate funding. And do we have control of this? No. The helicopter systems in Wyoming are responsible to the FAA, not to the state medical system. So we have a very difficult time controlling actually the quality of care on our helicopters. So that's a big problem for any rural system, is appropriate transportation. The rural communities need to be involved. Not every town gets a hospital, but they can have a clinic. They could have an outpatient clinic that does elective surgery. It can be done with a local surgeon, but it's hard to support a local surgery with just outpatient surgery. But everybody needs some sort of plan for access. It's the concept of making the rural surgery system like the trauma system is you rise to the level of care you need in the system, but the fact that you can't get people into the regional hospital because they're full, why can't some of the patients that are just occupying beds to take care come back to the rural hospitals? I mean, they don't get paid. You can't send them back because rural hospitals don't get paid to do that. Why can't we arrange for that to happen? There are so many issues in every different area that's different. I can't tell you the answer to this, but we have to come up with it as surgeons. Regional system improves peer review and more experienced surgeons. Complex cases can be referred to tertiary care centers, but the tertiary care center has to be a part of the system. I mean, I try to send somebody to the university hospital, and if it's a negative wallet biopsy, it's a hard sell. I mean, I'm doing cases I don't particularly want to do, but they have no funding. So if I don't do it, nobody does it. And so these are some of the issues we're dealing with now. In a regional system that provides support and ensures quality of surgical care in rural areas is where rural surgeons will have to work in the future. Thank you.
Well, there's the conclusion, folks. Thank you for your attention, interest, and that to me demonstrates support for rural surgeons, and we need it. I leave this slide up here because perhaps this is a good point for all of us to start a discussion. So I put that to you, and I invite questions or anybody wants to offer some viewpoint information, please step to the podium or step to the microphone.
Hello, my name is Dave Gutierrez. I'm a general surgeon in a rural town called Winsboro, Louisiana. I hail from big city medicine, which was intolerable for me anyways, as a private practice surgeon. But one of the things that I'm worried about is that I'm seeing even in the closest urban area, which is Monroe, Louisiana, almost everybody there's doing robotic stuff even to fix inguinal hernias. And I'm wondering, am I going to fall behind? And would I even be marketable if where I'm at right now is closes? You know, so does anybody know what we do about training rural surgeons? Because the cost of one of these devices is undoable.
Yes. I think that's a great point. My opinion is that the robotics is not the same as laparoscopic surgery. That was a revolution. I don't believe robotics is that revolution. It's just another technique, quite honestly. But it's being promoted as a real revolution. Pat, you got...
Is this on? I guess so. So the issue of robotics has been an interest of mine, and I've actually looked into it fairly deeply. And... you know, a lot of what drives the purchase of robots is the purchase of other robots. So if Hospital A buys a robot, then Hospital B needs to buy a robot, and the town 40 miles away to my west has a 150-bed hospital that has two robots, and a 50-bed hospital that has one robot, and it has had zero impact on my practice. And at some point in time, I think that hospitals are going to stop worrying so much about market share and be forced to look at the profitability of the service lines that they offer. And the robots, other than for certain service lines that essentially require the use of robots, such as if you're doing radical prostatectomies and you don't have a robot, nobody's going to go to you, period, end of discussion, right? But for the things that we do for cholecystectomies, hernia orifice, Nissen's, valvular sections, et cetera, there is no evidence of any superiority of the robot in any application. At some point in time, we're going to have what I call surgical stewardship programs in the hospitals where people are going to actually begin to look and see what the costs are. Our CFO actually was formerly the CFO of one of the hospitals in the adjoining town that is the smallest hospital in the United States at that time ever to have purchased a robot. And, you know, it was, oh, we're going to make it up on volume. It's the, Lucille Ball, Ethel Mertz widget sale thing where we're losing a quarter on every widget. We have to make it up on volume. No, you just lose more money. And so, well, it's true. If you continue to provide superlative surgical care to your patients, I don't think you really have to worry about it as a general surgeon. You'll get your patients in and out. They'll have fewer neater holes if you're doing it laparoscopically than if you do it robotically. They'll get a smaller hospital bill. They'll be grateful.
One of my colleagues here was worried about recruiting, though. You're talking about reasons to recruit people. And, again, in these bigger centers, I was sitting on lectures where they're doing inguinal hernia orifice taps with these devices, and I agree they're not necessary, but it's we're losing surgeons in the rural area. How do you attract them?
So some of the ways that's going to happen, and I'm going to give another talk about next week about will rural surgery survive, and we look at this, and some of the solutions have to do with not over local stewardship, but how we're training surgeons and where the surgeons are being trained. And that I think will be key to offsetting that. They will. So were you rural when you were brought up? Were you born and raised rural?
No, I was raised in Miami, Florida.
Oh, that's very interesting. You're not like Pat. I think it'll work. You stay involved, show your results, and there'll be somebody that'll want to come. Like you wanted to go from Miami to rural, there'll be someone that'll want to come in your environment. Mike Serap.
Yeah, just a great talk by everybody, and I think you ought to put them on the ACS rural community for the folks that weren't here today. Just put your slides up there with a little summary. I think that'd be much appreciated. I think there's a key word that like two or three of you hit on already about keeping patients local, and it's transparency. We all have this, we need to have a commitment, which we haven't had in the past, to absolutely measure what we do, collate it to the big cities, and market that to the people in our communities. We don't do enough of that. We don't get paid to do it. But if you can show people at your Kiwanis, at your Rotary, that you get patients out with an inguinal hernia, either it's even an open inguinal hernia or laparoscopic, they go home the same day just like they do for robotic. We know exactly what our length of stay is. We have a tremendously better time to treat, which is a national problem right now. It's 43 days in the biggest cancer centers between the time of diagnosis down to treatment. Our patients for colon cancer get treated a mean of 4 days. Our breasts are 7 days. If we market that to our people, then we have our discussion and a pre-op discussion in the office that says, hey, you can go to the big city and get this done robotically, or we can do it the traditional way that I've done it for 30 years, and I haven't changed. They're going to stay local. They really are, even if it is an extra day. I think that we need to take that extra step to go find measures, whether they're COC or the breast measures or trauma measures. We don't have to be accredited, but take those measures that you can fulfill, measure them, compare them, and report back to your community. And then just one more thing, after 31 years in a community, the way you build relationships is that you give the community the feeling that you're there for their betterment. And we do these free skin screenings. We take patients that don't have insurance and do breast exam and mammogram. Over a period of years, that builds such a relationship with your community that there's no way they're going to leave town for anything because you've already provided something. You have skin in the game, and you know they're there for them. And that's the advantage all of us have over everybody in the big city, is that they know exactly who you are, and they want you to take care of them. So I think we have the answers and pretty good examples up on the table there. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Please, folks, embrace those words of wisdom. Please. We talk to our patients. We touch our patients. We're part of the communities.
Hi. Kathy Hughes. I practice in Cape Cod. Don't laugh. It's sort of rural adjacent. My question is where there's the isolation, risk of burnout, the availability, 24/7, 365. There is sort of a spectrum between the concept of locums and acute care. Acute care was originally envisioned as really helpful in the large, busy urban academic centers, but there may well be a role in that spectrum with locums for the rural surgeon. So for relief, for contact, any thoughts about, incorporating a more formalized program to offer relief and support to the isolated rural surgeons in a more codified system rather than the commercial products? And what are the panel's thoughts on things like that?
Kathy, I like that, and I would say basically to what you said, yes. We've given it thought. It's been a topic of conversation with the Advisory Council on Rural Surgery. It's been promoted to the college itself. There are some potential obstacles. They worry about malpractice and the like. But I would say that the rural surgeons who are still very much involved, and like someone like yourself, will bring this forward. There should be a way to do it. And again, that would be some way. Where will the rural surgeon work? Well, he'll live in Boston, but he'll come to Cape Cod for a period of time to work, for example.
And as far as recruiting, it's a potential rent-to-own model.
Yes, yes. Jim, did you have something you wanted to say? Did I see your hand?
Oh.
I'm sorry.
A number of these issues can be taken care of with a system. I mean, people come to me in Casper with a hernia from a small town, and I know the surgeon there. I ask them, do you know you can get this done there? And I've sent them back. You support the system. The system has to support the surgeons in the small towns, and that's part of the obligation. It also supports the overall part of being a cancer program. If they are involved in the peer review of cancer treatment stuff from the region, then they've got the stamp in addition to the barbershop.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes. We have four people standing.
Pardon?
So please go ahead.
Brian Easy from out in California. Dave Grant. Quick question: how do you? It seems like with the regional system that you're kind of chasing your tail a little bit, and that one of the things that attracts young surgeons to the rural area is the ability to have a broad scope of practice. But with regionalization, you're kind of starting to send your stuff back as you take away kind of emergent surgery and have kind of smaller areas that have less capability. Is that am I understanding that wrong, or how do you reconcile that?
I think it could be. Suppose you're in a rural area. This is me now talking. We'll see. But you're in a rural area, and you want to have a broad scope of practice. You promote yourself that way. You get your results. And you have that kind of practice. I think it becomes individual. If you're also, maybe you're older, maybe you do not want to have a broad scope of practice, and you're part of a regional system, then you are going to send more to the hub as opposed to keeping it at the edge of the wheel on a spoke sort of thing. I don't think there's anything that's mandatory that says the system approach means that you've got to give up a lot of stuff that you may want to keep as long as you have the capabilities, resources to take care of it. Am I right, folk? Do you agree with that?
No, I would agree with
that. Well, I mean, one of the things that I see in the various regional systems that have approached us is that they think these spokes flow one direction. And if any of you were in Dr. Porter's talk yesterday, he's one of the most highly respected healthcare economists in the world, and he was talking about value in medicine and how regionalized systems should work toward an efficient system. And his vision, which I would embrace entirely, is that each node in this system should do the things they do efficiently, and that rural hospitals, for instance, do things like gallbladder surgery extremely efficiently. So anytime that we're approached by anybody from regional hospital, I say, well, you know what, I'll be happy to send you some of those cases if you'll send me the ones that I can do better than you can. And nobody ever wants to take that up. It's just like, no, mm-mm.
Mary?
Speaking about, you know, coverage, in North Dakota, it's really frontier. And I grew up on a farm in North Dakota, went to the big city. And I was always told as a kid, you got to get off the farm. I think it's reverse. No, we need to get out of the city. And so what we are utilizing is taking our academic surgeons and sending them to cover to the rural areas and partnering with that way to maintain and give a feedback called the Rural Surgery Support Program. And so I think this is a great opportunity now as we rethink the whole model for our academic surgeons to get out of the city and come to the farm.
But our academic surgeons can't cover what I do. They don't do the
catch. What? But then you can mentor them. Then you could mentor them. Bring them out there, show them, and then they'll be. I think it's the more that we get it out there that we're not trying to be, quote, different. We just have a different structure and the needs that we have. So I'm kind of a half full-time girl, and I just say this is an opportunity.
They have to be exposed. I mean, we have to get them some kind of exposure. Again, that's what happened to me. I got exposed to it and fell in love with it. And even like my wife, I remember she's an OB-GYN, and when I first approached her, when I was talking to her, she was still a chief resident. And I approached her and said, and this is how they did it there, was like they didn't have in-house anesthesia. And it was just, and so she's just like, well, how the heck can you do a C-section without in-house, you know, do OB? But you do it, right? It does get done. But when they're coming from the city, that's just, you know, foreign to them. So they need to get exposure.
Rob Guitarm said, I'm also from North Dakota, so we do have a little bit of a unique experience. We do have a rural training program for the surgery residents, and part of that is that they go out to the smaller communities, they see what can be done. And the one thing I wanted to mention is part of that training does involve me teaching them at one of the larger institutions how to use robots and how to do it appropriately if you're given the opportunity, because as was pointed out, some places that are smaller have a robot because they want a urologist. And if you've got that technology available, as a newly graduated resident, you need to know how to use that technology and situations in which you can use that technology to provide a minimally invasive option that you otherwise wouldn't be able to provide the same patient, and you would require them to go somewhere else. So just part of the things that we need to think about as we're training residents.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that information. Last question.
Hi, Megan Wooster, PGY4 in Columbus, Ohio. I grew up in Iowa, outside of town, about 400. Just wanted to thank you for this opportunity. My question is, a lot of us, Dr. Molt, your paradigm shift and bringing the work ethic and the educational needs together in a small community in healthcare is amazing. How do we do that for other opportunities like technology, business, where we have the work ethic in the small town? How do we keep the jobs there so we have the patients that we can serve there?
Sure. Oh, well, simple question. Gee whiz.
That's going to be next year's panel.
I apologize.
No, I mean, our community actually is, you know, don't anybody throw rocks at me, but we're Trump country, okay? 84% of the people in my home county voted for Donald Trump. Why did they vote for Donald Trump? Because they saw their jobs disappearing offshore. We had a local automotive parts factory, which had been in business since the 1930s. It was first bought by the Carlyle Group, who, as far as I'm concerned, are a bunch of corporate raiders, although they are one of the largest private holding companies in the world. They bled it, loaded it up with debt, and sold it to the Rand Group, which is owned by a guy in New Zealand who is in the process of building like a $400 million yacht or something to replace his previous $300 million yacht. And they moved the manufacturing to China and Mexico, and we found nothing to replace it. It's a problem. People do find jobs, though. It's just that they're not finding jobs in the community. And it also, the pattern of business practice in the country has led to what I call, you know, we used to talk about the brain drain. Well, now we have a wealth drain. So the local businesses that used to be owned by local people who were making good money out of it and keeping the profits at home are now going down to Arkansas to the, you know, to Walmart corporate headquarters or to, you know, whatever, you know, all of the fast food places, Subway, those are not locally owned, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, that's a very difficult problem that I'm sure I don't have a solution to. What we have tried to do in our community through, we have a very viable junior college. In fact, we were on somebody's list of the top 15 best junior colleges in the country in terms of value of education. We try to train people for jobs that are available in the area, nursing, information technology, electrical linemen, auto mechanics. Believe it or not, there's a shortage of auto mechanics in the world. But yeah, I would, if I knew how to bring a factory to town, I would be a local hero for sure.
Thank you for that. The answer is extremely difficult to a very complex situation. What I would implore everybody is let's stand together, be leaders, use contacts, let's continue and support rural surgery. I thank you for being here, folks.